Medical information obtained from our website or on the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If you have, or you suspect you might, have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a healthcare provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of the sports doctor, this radio show, or their sponsors.
Hey, everybody, live from Chicago. Welcome. It's the Sports Doctor. Happy Doctor's Day, everybody. The All Things Sports Medicine, Fitness, and Wellness. I'm Dr. Bob Weil, brought to you by Lower Extremity Review and MVP Parent Magazines, Global Schoolwear, School Uniforms by Tommy Hilfiger. Quick shout-out, Bruce Merrin, Celebrity Speakers Bureau. We're honored to be part of that. He goes back, his first sports celebrities in PR were Jackie Robinson and Muhammad Ali. I don't want to date the guy. We've got a great doubleheader today. Peter Golenbach, he's a prolific author of almost 60 books, many baseball books. And he's joining me to talk about his new Whispers of the Gods. Some great stories, great interviews of these stars of the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And then Jessica Crowley, mental performance specialist for the athletes, teams, and first responders will be returning. Then the sports doctor's in, little Bob Guide of Wisdom. Peter Golenbach, welcome to the Sports Doctor.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Bob.
You know, Peter, everybody, has written more than 60 books, including 10 New York Times bestsellers. His best-selling books on baseball include Dynasty, the New York Yankees, 49-64, the Bronx Zoo, that sounds familiar, the Brooklyn Dodgers and all history, the miraculous history of the great Mets. So, Peter, give us a little bit of background on yourself and some of your exciting baseball writing.
Well, how far back you want me to go?
I can go back. You could be suave about it. I'll be suave about it.
Okay. Let me tell you how this Whispers of the Gods came to be. I was the sports editor of the Dartmouth at Dartmouth College when I got a copy of this book called The Glory of Their Times by Larry Ritter. Larry Ritter was a professor of economics at NYU, and he spent 3 years going around the country interviewing players who had played with Babe Ruth and Ty Cobb and Shoeless Joe Jackson, players from the 10s and the 20s. And I got this book, and I was absolutely mesmerized by it as these players told the stories of their careers. And over the years, as you've said, I have written books. Bums was about the Brooklyn Dodgers dynasty, about the Yankees. Wrigleyville about the Chicago Cubs, your Chicago Cubs. I did Fenway about the Boston Red Sox, Amazing about the Mets. I've interviewed more than 200 players, maybe almost 300 players, over the course of the last 30, 40 years. So a very close friend of mine was Jim Bouton, who pitched for the Yankees. When I lived in Englewood, New Jersey, before I moved here to Florida, I live in St. Petersburg right now. Before I moved to Florida, I one of the towns I lived in was Englewood, and Jim Bouton was close to me, and I would babysit his kids, and I was close with his wife and his family. Well, about 3 years ago, he developed Alzheimer's, and last year he passed away, which was very, very sad to me. So my thought was, how can I keep Jim's memory alive and at the same time keep alive the memory of a lot of these fabulous baseball players who have since passed away? So what I did is this book consists of 17 different interviews. Jim Bouton is chapter one, and he's the last chapter. I interviewed Rex Barney of the Dodgers, Stan Musial, Ted Williams, of course, Phil Rizzuto of the Yankees, Ron Santo of the Cubs, Roy Campanella, the wonderful catcher for the Brooklyn Dodgers, And Roger Maris was another of my most enjoyable interviews over the years. And I put all of these interviews together into this one book, with the hope being that lovers of the game of baseball will see this as a sequel to The Glory of Their Times.
And what were some of the things that you would ask all of these players, out of the so many different things you would discuss? What were some of the things you really wanted to get, that you wanted to share with the careers and lives of some of these greats?
Well, more than anything, I was looking for stories. So, for instance, Tom Sturdivant, who won 16 games with the Yankees in 1955 and 1956, might have been 56, 57. What I wanted to know from Tom, of course, what it was like playing for Casey Stengel, what it was like to be Mickey Mantle's teammate. Sturdivant told a couple of really marvelous stories. They're in this book. One time Mickey said to him, "You know, you're the only pitcher who, if you threw me fastballs, I could bat right-handed and I could hit the ball out of Yankee Stadium." Well, the year after Sturdivant got traded to the Kansas City A's, Sturdy went up to Mickey and said, "Okay, this is the day." So on this particular bat, Mickey got up right-handed, and the manager of the Kansas City team whistled to Sturdivant. In other words, he had to throw a curveball. And Sturdivant didn't want to throw it, looked back over him to say, as if to say, "You know, my arm hurts," and the manager whistled again and waved his hand as if to say, "If you don't throw a curveball, it's going to cost you money." So Sturdivant threw him this wicked curveball and totally surprised Mickey, who was looking, for a fastball. And Mickey was just absolutely friggin' furious, as the way Sturdivant tells it. So the next pitch he threw him a slider.
I wonder what Roger Maris had to say about Mickey Mantle. You know, everybody, you're listening to The Sports Doctor. I'm Dr. Bob Weil, sports podiatrist. Go to my website, sportsdoctorradio.com. If you go over to radio shows, you go back years. What were the topics? National guests, international guests, local guests, coaches, authors, doctors, athletes. So many different topics. We have a lot of excitement on Twitter as well as LinkedIn. I can't tell you how many guests I get from those venues at Sports Doc, DOC Radio. We're talking with I'm a baseball historian in a lot of ways. And I understand, Peter, you're now coaching Little League. So you get the
well,
other
I
side
did.
Of
I,
it.
I coached, I coached
so
Little League when my kid was
about the challenges of, you know, in those days. How many guys threw in the 90s, if any, in pitching?
Oh, back then? You know, you had your Bob Feller. Bob Feller
right.
In the 1940s was supposedly pitched 101 miles an hour, and everybody thought that was absolutely magnificent. Nolan Ryan was somebody who threw 100, and he was different. He was special. Now, of course, everybody throws a 95 miles an hour. If you don't throw 95, you don't make it.
One of the giant challenges. It's funny, when I've had the Yankees team physician, Dr. Chris Amott, on the show, we've talked about, you know, youth baseball and all of these overuse injuries. Of course, arm problems mm-hmm. are famous.
Sure.
Where, again, you have there's five guys on every team throwing 95 miles an hour.
Amazing.
And sometimes
amazing.
At very, very young ages where it's just too aggressive. Isn't it amazing?
Right.
How much bigger, faster, and stronger today's baseball players are to like these stars you're writing about.
Well, Mickey Mantle never lifted a weight. I mean, he never lifted a weight in his life. When he was a teen, he worked in a coal mine. He was called a screen ape, and he would take his sledgehammer and slam his sledgehammer into the rocks to make them smaller, and that's where he got his great strength. But he never lifted a weight in his entire life. The players today lift weights, an hour, 2 hours a day, every single day, whether they're playing or not.
Let alone the changes in nutrition, the changes in the mental game, which we talk about on The Sports Doctor all the time, whether you're the
right.
best athlete in the world, whether you're the parents of a good athlete, whether you're the pressure on these kids, in so many different instances. so the so-called mental game. I'm interested also, and with a lot of these different players, the thought in those days, again, when it came to some of the different competitions. Again, I grew up in the Bronx as a kid, man. There was the Yankees over here, the Dodgers over here, the Giants over here, and a lot of arguing friends and family, you know?
Sure. Well, that was they say it was the golden age. You know, Duke Snider in center field for the Dodgers, the Brooklyn Dodgers. Mickey Mantle was in center field for the New York Yankees, and the marvelous Willie Mays, of course, was in center field for the New York Giants. I mean, you can just imagine. And from the people I interviewed who lived back then, every once in a while they get in a fist fight over it, over who was the better center fielder.
Yes. You know, Mantle was the fastest guy ever went down the line in first base before all of his injuries. Again, could hit the ball further than anybody. No one was quite as flashy as Willie Mays. And so, you know, he was like a 10 star with his base running and all of these different things. So it was a fun time, you know, and those days really continue today. And what were some of the other stories? Oh, by the way, give me the website or the information. Can they get the book on Amazon? What's the best way to get the book, Peter?
You know, the best way is, you know, go to your local bookstore, which I always recommend because I love your local bookstore. Or the other way, of course, is Amazon, which is the easiest. You order it from Amazon, you get it 2 days later. That's an amazing, amazing company.
Right. So who are you rooting for? Who are you rooting for in your early days as well as your career in these sports? I don't want you to give away any secrets, but
secrets. I'm pretty much an open book. I grew up in Stamford, Connecticut, which is about 65 miles from Yankee Stadium. And my first memories of the Yankees won, let me tell you, from 1949 to 1964, the Yankees in those 16 years won 14 pennants and 9 world championships. And that's who I was rooting for all the time. Made my whole life rooting for the Yankees, rooting for Mickey Mantle.
Isn't that one of your books? Isn't one of your books about the Yankee dynasty, Peter?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a whole story behind that, too. When I was a young kid, I went to the Stanford Library, and I found The Yankees by Frank Graham. And that book was published about 1947. And for a long time, my thought was, I'm going to write the sequel to The New York Yankees by Frank Graham. So after law school, I went to Prentice Hall, where I worked as a writer and a lawyer. And after about 6 weeks, I walked down to the trade book office, and I talked my way into getting a contract to write Dynasty.
So, again, some of these players, many, again, from the Yankees, give us a rundown of a list of a few others who stick out in your mind in the collection in the book.
Well,
Roger
Maris was among he gave me one of the very last interviews he ever gave anybody before he passed away. I had gone to see him in Gainesville. He played 2 years with the Cardinals. He took the Cardinals to the pennant in 67 and 68. And he retired, and Gussie Bush gave him a beer distributorship in Gainesville. So I went to see him there. And he didn't see me. And it made it seem like he wasn't going to do that. And so I left there very disappointed, and I drove to Atlanta, where I met with Pleat Boyer, the Yankee third baseman. Boyer asked me to meet in his restaurant at 9 o'clock in the morning. So I went there, and I waited there until literally 9 o'clock at night when he showed up, and he showed up with who else but Roger Maris. Cleet was going to be playing in Japan, and Roger was his best friend, and so the two of them were together. And Roger and I sat down while Cleet had some business to do, and finally Roger said to me, "Do you want to go outside and talk?" And so that was my opportunity to interview Roger Maris, one of the most interesting people I've run across.
Yes, I think I read that story about that somewhere. It sounds so familiar. Again, understanding what was it like. You know, people resented him What was it like to be ahead of Mickey Mantle in the race to match Babe Ruth? And that whole craziness of that time. And I understand now you're putting all your skills together with all of this as a Little League coach.
Yep. Well, what happened was that Mantle had been booed for a long time by Yankee fans because for years Casey Stengel always said Mickey should be better. He doesn't work at it hard enough. And finally, when Roger came along in 1960 and started to become the star on the Yankees, all of a sudden now the Yankee fans were rooting for Mickey over Roger. Roger was not the outgoing kind of a guy that Mickey was. And it was very... Roger was the sort of guy, he told me, he said, really, all I wanted to do was play. Otherwise, I wanted the writers to leave me alone. I wanted the fans to leave me alone. And the pressure on him in 61 was enormous. Just enormous to the extent that...
He was, again,
at the end of the season, he was losing
his hair. Everywhere they went, you know, of course, then it was years later with... McGuire and Sosa,
yep.
You know, the,
yep.
the rock stars with the Barry Bonds and that
right.
whole circus that went along with it. But
right.
yeah, I again, with the big interest many times on the Sports Doctor and the whole mental game,
right.
I'm sure. Give us some other quick names of interviews before we run out of time in a minute or two of some names that you feature in the 17 chapters.
Among them, Monty Irvin. Who was the star for the New York Giants. Monty Irvin told me that in 1946 he was called by Branch Rickey to actually become the first African-American to play in the Major League Baseball. But Monty told me that during the 3 years he was in the Army, he was treated so terribly by the white Southern racist officers. That he just emotionally he knew that he would be unable to take what Jackie ended up taking when Jackie became
great player,
the first African-American
on his own right.
player.
Peter Goldenbach, I want to thank you so much for joining me. Again, people can go to Amazon. They can go to any of these areas. Whispers of the Gods is your new book. I knew would run out of time with you. So hold on, Peter. Everybody will be right back. Hey everybody, it's Dr. Bob Weil, a sports doctor. I'm excited to announce the release of my new book, co-written with Sharkey Zartman, hashtag Hey Sports Parents, an essential guide for any parent with a child in sports. You know, Sharkey is a former Hall of Fame volleyball player. She's the mom of two daughters who became Division I volleyball players. Together, we have over 70 years of combined youth sports experience. The goal of the book? Give you the essential tools and guidance to make your experience as a sports parent the best it could be. Hashtag Hey Sports Parents is divided into four sections. The first section, Sports Parenting 101. Sharkey talks everything about... parenting, about coaching, that whole interaction between parents and coaches, coaching your own kid. What are the things to really pay attention to? The second section is the Sports Doctor's In, yours truly. My discussion of injury prevention and treatment, choosing the best shoes, youth sports and drugs, essential exercises, the dilemma of youth football, orthotics. Third section, experts speak out. We bring together eight different experts in nutrition and sports performance and mental training in all aspects of coaching in that section. The last section is the parent's perspective, some insights from about a half a dozen parents of athletes. So everyone, hey, get out your megaphone, spread the word. Now available on Amazon. Order now. You'll be more confident. So will your young athlete. Hashtag Hey Sports Parents. Hey everybody, Dr. Bob here. LER, Lower Extremity Review Magazine, is celebrating their 10th anniversary. It's been a decade of providing key clinical and practical information about concerns, conditions, and treatment solutions for the lower extremity, both sports and non-sports alike. LER is the only multidisciplinary publication for doctors of all specialties, educators, therapists, and trainers. They inform practitioners on current developments in the diagnosis, treatment, and prevention of lower extremity injuries. LER prides itself on editorial integrity and evidence-based content. Their tagline, collaborative care for better outcomes, says it all. Hey, colleagues, go to lermagazine.com. Hey, everybody, welcome back. It's the Sports Doctor. I'm Dr. Bob Wiles, sports podiatrist. Staying local, we are welcoming back Jessica Crowley. She's a mental performance specialist for athletes, for teams, for first responders. She recently retired from the police force. Jessica, welcome back to the Sports Doctor.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me back.
Give us some background on yourself and some of the different work you've done. You know, again, the working with first responders, it's so special, to say the least. Try to keep your fellow police officers in shape, you know what I mean? Give us some background.
Sure. I joined the police department back in 1994 and just recently retired. During that time, I experienced some physical injuries on the job and some trauma, and took my business and said, you know what, this isn't just a good thing for athletes, but it works so well with tactical athletes, for law enforcement, for first responders in general. So I kind of did a study, and I reached out to a bunch of police and firemen and dispatchers and said, hey, I'm going to kind of test this idea out. This is what I do with athletes. And I created a niche specific for first responders for trauma and performance improvement. It's a little different than what I do with athletes, but it's been an incredibly successful tool. So I'm still doing that. It's phenomenal. And working with athletes at the same time as an athlete and with a parent with children who are athletes, it's been really rewarding.
Yeah, as you know, it's been a hot topic on the Sports Doctor for decades, the challenge of youth sports and the concerns of too much pressure on these kids and overuse injuries, both mentally and physically, and the whole chaos, along with the great news of some great education and great groups and great organizations. Heck, the National Alliance of Youth Sports, we've had them on the show numerous times, celebrated their 40th year coaching coaches. So the challenge, and when you think about the physical demand of a first responder, fireman, you know, running up a ladder with 100 pounds on his back or whatever, and what's necessary in some instances, it's surprising there wasn't more real attention to this. Weren't you surprised?
Very much. It's still a very, very difficult area of first responders to kind of break into, the mental side of things, because of the risk associated with the status of the job and the position and what we do in the public's eye. So this awareness that you're even mentioning right now is a great opportunity. To just bring awareness that there are so many tools, so many resources out there for not just first responders and athletes, but people across the board when it comes to mental health, in that it doesn't just have to be a psychologist or a social worker or a therapist. It can be all of these specialists that utilize a lot of the tools that I use.
You know, it's interesting, Jessica, wherever I've had guests on from around the world, whatever their vocation or specialty, whatever field they were in over this 2.5 years of the pandemic, mental health has exploded into the awareness of everybody, whether you're parents of young children, whether you're teams that played or didn't play, a tremendous challenge. The last two Olympics, mental health was the biggest topic between Simone Biles and the drug nightmare with the Russians at the Winter Olympics. So that the mental health aspect, I guess, has really, really come front and center, hasn't it?
It definitely, which is very positive. I mean, it's a very important part of athletics and competition that has been pretty hidden for a number of years. And so this these moments, as bad as they are for the athletes during the competitions, wow, how it's really advancing and growing the sports for our athletes, not just as athletes, but as people.
That's a major key, you know, Jess. The idea, again, when you're dealing with young athletes, you're dealing with their parents. When you're dealing with young athletes, you're dealing with their coaches. Mm-hmm. And this is why I always ask people in your world how your sports psychology skills are, you know, when you're dealing with those kinds of concerns and pressures. You know, one of the chapters in my book, Hashtag Hey Sports Parents, one of the chapters is called The Prodigy Sports, where we see this specialization, like my specialty, figure skating, very, very early. This is all they want to do, no matter what we say. And the other monster, which is youth sports and drugs. And so many of these kids taking over-the-counter medicines because they're pushing the envelope too aggressively. And how do you find that educational challenge with some parents and coaches of some of these, you know, serious adolescent athletes, Jessica?
Sure. I think that's a topic that actually needs to be brought up earlier in the school days. You know, you and I wake up and we know what normal feels like, and kids really don't. They can't tell whether they feel normal or they don't feel normal. They just know that something isn't quite right. And so they turn to a lot of these various medications to self-medicate, to feel normal. When you're talking
or
about
to block pain.
Well,
again, you know, Dr. Wild, don't you understand? My daughter's ankles hurt unless she takes two Advil once or twice a day. She can't be on the tennis. You know, she can't. Gee, they're doing the double jumping and skating. They're skating 10 days a week. You know, her knees are hurting. That kind of challenge where we know there's so much overkill.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we're trying to deal with, you know, trying to do the two things everybody cares about. You know, number one, prevent injury. And number two, how to enhance performance. We're indicated. What's the website people go to, Jessica, to find out about you and your work?
AspireWinningEdge.com. And what you're talking about is actually a pretty interesting topic when it comes to the mind and injury and how our brain instantly engages the muscles around those injuries to keep them safe. And it actually creates and causes additional re-injury. So a lot of the work I do with athletes after an injury is teaching their mind how to let go of that muscle guarding around that injury once the doctor tells them that it's healed. So there is a huge connection between the mind and injury recovery and the medications that they're taking.
Everybody's in a hurry. And many times we see that we start cutting corners. I have a term, I call it intelligent rest, which really means that rest and recovery is so important, and we need to really pay more attention to it, especially in young growing bodies. And of course, the better the young athlete, the more aggressive many times the training, the traveling teams, the club sports, all of these things that are, you know, are pushing, you know, these kids. And, you know, the like in the world of figure skating, you know, with the years ago, there wasn't a woman in the world that did triple jumps. Not one, not Peggy Fleming, not Dorothy Hamill, none of these great champions. Today, we got these kids that are doing quads, much bigger, much faster, much stronger. And the kinds of challenges of overuse We try to make a big deal out of that situation, don't we?
Absolutely. And the pressure that these athletes are feeling to perform at a level that has expectation associated with it, right there puts them at a disadvantage, puts their body and their mental game at a disadvantage. And so,
interesting point you bring up. One of the contributors to my book, Rob Andrews, the Institute of Sports Performance in Houston, Texas, got a wall of gold medals because he's worked with all the young gymnasts at the Simone Biles, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And one of his specialties is dealing with the mental side of coming back from injury. I don't know how long it's going to take, and gee, it might be the end of my career, and, you know, all of these kinds of semi-nightmares. You know, when you talk about some of the different reactions of the brain, I guess when you're working with some of these athletes, you're looking to unwind that muscle memory, you know?
Rewire it. You know, the brain is so plastic, and we can undo and redo and strengthen and create and teach our brain how to keep us safe but yet allow us to perform at our maximum potential. And there are so many different tools and techniques out there, especially during those moments of transition and injury recovery. And moments like Simone Biles had, and this is a hyper-awareness of her own body and what it was that she was feeling. And she knew what she needed to do to keep herself safe in that moment.
You better know. You know,
absolutely.
When you talk, I know when I've heard the term, you know, the twisties, you know, I don't know where I am in space. Good luck to you when you're doing a triple or quadruple jump, whatever they were doing. And again,
right.
Such regards to her to be able to admit it, talk about it, you know, bring it out in the open in that regard. But it's a great example how even the best in the world, very often dealing with some of these challenges, how has the world of first responders, the police department, the firemen, some of the others you might be working with, respond to trying to pay attention to what you're teaching?
They're becoming much more open to it. I just recently did a trauma conference in Oklahoma in November, and I was fortunate enough to lecture for 2 days and work with 8 different police officers who had significant amounts of trauma, and the results were great for them because they were ready. They were leaning into a little bit of vulnerability. They let go of that need for control, and they leaned into the vulnerability part to push them past where they were.
I want to talk to you more about that whole side of things. Again, that whole mental challenge. Mm-hmm. That trauma, the concussion, whole side of things, again, with some of these different challenges, with some of these people who do some of this valuable work. We're talking with Jessica Crowley, mental performance, athletes, specialists, responders. We'll be right back. Sports Doc. Hey, everybody. MVP Parent Magazine is special. Evidence-based topics on all areas of youth sports. Rich Dubin, a sports dad himself, takes his 3 decades of publishing. He just celebrated the 12th anniversary of the acclaimed LER Lower Extremity Review magazine, one of Sports Doctor's key supporters, and he pours it into MVP Parent. Factual evidence-based info on such key topics like physical and mental training, nutrition, injury awareness, treatment, recovery, and prevention. I am proud to be a contributor to MVP Parent with the Sports Doctor is In article in each issue. Go to MVPParent.com. MVPParent.com. Hey, it's Dr. Bob. School Uniforms by Tommy Hilfiger is setting a new standard within the school uniform market. More schools are understanding the value that uniforms provide, school pride and identification being one of them. Another is the well-recognized reduction of student pressure to keep up with classmates in the real world of what to wear each day to school. School Uniforms by Tommy Hilfiger provides amazing quality and value to
to its partner schools and families. It is truly the first brand in this market that students are excited about wearing. Go to the website, globalschoolwear.com. Globalschoolwear.com. Everybody, we're back live from Chicago. It's the Sports Doctor. I'm Dr. Bob Weil, all things sports medicine, fitness, wellness. We're talking with Jessica Crowley, who is a mental performance specialist, recently retired a policewoman, working with athletes, teams, and first responders. We were talking about, you just did a trauma clinic, that whole side of things, you know, when you think of first responders, of course, whole different mental crazy world. On the one hand, someone's trying to compete, and that stress, the first responder, he's trying maybe to stay alive in some sort of a stressful situation. So that whole topic, talk a little bit more about, Jess, that, you know, in the challenge of getting these responders to pay attention, these trauma, big area.
Trauma is a big area, and you mentioned something that was really important, is the need to stay alive. And that's not just in the field, but that's this whole notion of increase of police suicide. In the difference between what
big
I
point.
Do
big point.
And first responder suicides is, by the time they get there, that's what a psychologist is for. That's what a therapist is for. What I do is different. I'm before that. I give people...
You're prehab.
Tools.
Right. You're
absolutely.
Part of prehab.
Exactly. Giving them tools, giving them skills, giving them abilities to get rid of strong emotions, get more of what they want, learn about goals, learn about sleep, how to lose weight, stop smoking, how to... lean into vulnerability rather than holding on to control, which does
do you work, Jeff, do you include, I'm sure you do, all aspects of, you know, mind, body, the important role of relaxation,
yes.
Of, you know, taking some time, paying attention to your tools. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, without using the word hypnosis, because that's a word that isn't...
Right. They used to feel that way about the word psychology. 25 years ago, you couldn't use that word.
Right.
Hypnosis is, I think you've come a long way, but I hear you.
I do. yeah, I use visualization, and I really integrate what I do with first responders. And I work both with over Zoom and in person with all of my clients, depending on what's best for them. And one of the key things is teaching them how to connect their mind and their body, how to relax. So we do incorporate a lot of visualization. Most people, when you say we're going to visualize, they're like, hey, I close my eyes and I see nothing. I see darkness. So it's that ability to teach people how to take their body and allow it to just fall into balance, how to just be. And how we do that is through visualization exercises and teaching them and guiding them and putting color, putting smell, sight,
I'll tell
sound.
You, my young figure skaters, you know, everybody listens to the Sports Doctor. You know, I'm still bragging. It's been 12 years since Evan Lysacek grew up here in Illinois to become the 2010 Men's Olympic gold medal figure skating champion. He was 10 years old when I put orthotics in his skates. I still put a lot of orthotics in 10-year-old skates. But the whole idea of the specialization, many times very, very early, figure skating 20, 25 years ago, they included visualization, where the
Absolutely.
Skaters would relax 10, 15 minutes, and they would try to visualize everything they do well. Of course, so many other sports really, really, really have caught on to that important factor. And I think everybody gets it in a way when you use the term visualization, I would think, that it's becoming a much easier sell. True?
It is. And it's starting from the basics. It's teaching people what it feels like. I mean, I used to visualize and be told to visualize, and I'd close my eyes, and I'm like, I got nothing. So it's really, it's teaching the athletes, like, this is what perhaps it looks like for you. So we use visualization. We use all different types of result versus process orientation and how to shift your mood. I mean, the sports don't change. So why do we have a good day one day and a bad day of practice another day, or a good game one day and a really bad, you know, game another day? It's how we show up. It's our energy. It's our mood. So how do we manage that? How do we control that and find our flow state? That yes, kind of that energy.
Flow
that
has always been a great word where people can just trying to kind of like tune in. It's amazing how the simple answer in so many ways, this idea of paying big attention to the mental side of things, whether somebody's trying to stick with their exercise program, mm-hmm. lose weight, or whether they're trying to make these kinds of changes, it's the mental game. And in exactly. many instances we see, it's mm-hmm. easier said than done. We all know that. But of there course. Are methods to the madness. You're talking about those tools. How big a problem still, Jessica, is I've been talking about childhood obesity for 25 years, give or take a few weeks on the Sports Doctor. The world of obesity, how big a problem is the obesity in whether it's police, firemen, first responders?
I would say that, you know, when we talk about obesity, we're also, you know, including in their blood pressure and a number of other things, not just weight itself. So, you know, what people don't understand in the first responder world, because we're not taught it, is adrenal fatigue and what the role that the vagal nerve plays and how the autonomic nervous system works. So obesity, oftentimes, especially for us, it happens because we're in the sympathetic nervous system too long, or we sit in the parasympathetic nervous system and we can't get out. And so we turn to all of these things that, you know, give us a quick fix, and then we drop right back down. So the education parts behind how the body functions and how we release our DHEA or all of these other dopamine and oxytocin into our body is really largely in part due to the obesity issue. So I think the education, both in the athletes and in the first responders, is big when you talk about obesity, sleep, smoking, medication, because they're trying to find some way to regulate their energy and their bodies, but it's having a side effect, which isn't good either. So that's
yeah,
a lot,
you know,
of what
that's
I
a huge
my
part, you know, yeah. trauma on the left, stress big time on the right. Is there any first responder who doesn't deal with, like you said, something very interesting, not only on the job, the stress,
correct.
But the stress, you know, coming home, your family, all these other kinds of things involved in that world. So, like you said, that adrenal stress, trying to turn off those systems that's like a high wire act.
Yeah. Yes. And it influences family life and home life. How you make your decisions, the ability to say no, and how easy no is because you don't have the energy. And so the work that I do, not just with the athletes and the first responders, is a lot of education with how their brain works, not scientific stuff, very meaningful, quick lessons in why it is that what they're feeling and what their body is doing is taking place, because people think they're broken. And people are not broken. They don't need to be fixed. They just
good
need
point.
To learn
yeah,
how
that,
to use.
That's an interesting point. We could talk for 3 hours about that. I mean, you know, we don't need to be fixed. It really no. is, again, this day and age, whether it's social media, whether mm-hmm. it's the chaos and so much what's going on with our polarization, let alone the pandemic, the stress level is at times 10 in all aspects of, and it's amazing how the new medicine is still is, you know, on the one hand, eat smarter. On the other hand, keep moving, you know, trying to get those points across in so many different instances because the pressure is on. Diabetes is exploding in our population. So these are tremendous problems. And when it comes, like you keep on talking about the importance of education, whether it's the individual themselves or their families or their coaches, kind of the name of the game with where you're at, isn't it?
It is. It is. And you hit the nail on the head. It's educating coaches as to even their voice and what their voice is doing to each athlete's system.
How young are you working with? At what ages?
I work with kids as young as 7, all the way up to...
10 seconds. Give me the website, Jess.
AspireWinningEdge.com.
AspireWinningEdge.com. Jessica Crowley. Hold on, Jess.
If you live in or near Aurora, Illinois, and you're into sports, fitness at any level, or your son and daughter is, you cannot forget about your feet. Your feet affect everywhere else. There are complex motions that come into play, especially in sports. Your ankles, knees, hips, and back all are affected with your foot mechanics. Come visit the office, Dr. Bob, and get evaluated. Check what shoes are best for you. I offer prescription orthotics, which is usually one of the major tools for treatment and prevention of foot-related ankle and leg problems. Also, enhancing performance. Step or two quicker. Call 630-898-3505 or go to sportsdoctorradio.com.
Hey, everybody. Dr. Bob here. LER, Lower Extremity Review Magazine, is celebrating their 10th anniversary. It's been a decade of providing key clinical and practical information about concerns, conditions, and treatment solutions for the lower extremity, both sports and non-sports alike. LER is the only multidisciplinary publication for doctors of all specialties, educators, therapists, and trainers. They inform practitioners on current developments in the diagnosis, treatment, and prevention of lower extremity injuries. LER prides itself on editorial integrity and evidence-based content. Their tagline, collaborative care for better outcomes, says it all. Hey, colleagues, go to lermagazine.com. Everybody, welcome back. Live from Chicago, it's the Sports Doctor. And the Sports Doctor is in segment where we highlight some upcoming shows and guests. We add a little bit of Bob Guida wisdom, and we answer a few emails. Great guest coming up next week, one of the leaders in the world of sports psychology, golf sports psychology. Gosh, it's been years since Mike Riggs has been with me. It'll be great to have him back. The co-author of my book, the author of numerous books I've participated with, talk show host for years, Sharkey Zartman, Hall of Fame volleyball coach and player, will be joining me. Following week, Barbie Engel, one of the champions in the world of pain, pain management, pain challenges. Then it's iffy whether Kirk Mango will be joining me. Kirk's the author of Becoming a True Champion. He's an NCAA gymnastics champion himself. Spent 25, 30 years in the world of physical education. Bob Guida made a science out of jump training. Way back working with these Olympic volleyball teams, there was this piece of equipment called a jump box, and it was like an oscillating, movable box, maybe 3 feet high, it might have been 36 inches, and it was a little rollable, And an athlete would jump, land, and what Bob would say, perch on the box with stability, with attention to jumping down and landing. Bob paid huge attention to landing, foot, knee alignment, postural integrity. So things like the jump box, which challenged all our balance systems. I think I still have slides of the late of 1980 Olympic gold medal men's volleyball team and some of the different activities they would do. There was a room at Sports Performance and Rehab Institute, which was our second facility, opened in the early 80s. Sports Fitness was the first with Bob Guida. There was a room called the Jump Down Room, where there was an actual cutout of about a foot and a half, padding all along, and the ability to, of all different athletes, all different ages, work on landing, jumping, control, stability. Great stuff. I got some emails here. Terry says, both my boys, 10 and 12 years old, they play sports. They have flat feet like their dad. Should we be concerned? You know, Terry, the 80% of the kids I see who have problems with their feet or lower legs have that excessive pronation or flat type foot. It's not a deformity. Many times it's not as efficient, and it can be problem causing a lot. So sometimes we'll see in the pediatrician, especially if we see they're not symptomatic, they're not complaining, the feet don't hurt. Commonly they do. Those ages, they might complain the heels hurt, their arches hurt. They might be complaining about their knees. If they're active in sports, then you are smart if you pay big attention to custom orthotics as they grow. We've had great success. This is one of my major areas of education, which is the importance of foot mechanics and alignment in youngsters, both boys and girls. What's the best shoe for your boys, depending on their sports? I would make them aware of strengthening exercises right out of my book, hashtag Sports Parents. Strengthen those feet and ankles with some rubber band work. Work on balance. Strengthen those feet and ankles. Look at orthotics big time. Bill said, you talk a lot about the sand dune. Yes, I do, Bill. You know, he was on a week or two ago, Matt Dahl, who created the sand dune. Simulates the beach, sand resistance for your feet, allowing your feet to grip and to rebound because of this particular foam material. So it's a unique foot strengthener, and it is also something that creates imbalance and instability up the whole chain of command. So it's one of the great balance training tools. Whether your son or daughter is the best athlete in the country, whether you're rehabbing from a back injury, whether you're trying to prevent falls for your parents or grandparents, the sand dune is unique. If you go to Sand Dune Instagram, you will see an array of from youngsters to superstars to disability people. Sand Dune's unique. It's got a higher and a lower end depending on the direction you're on it. People might just be walking on the sand dune initially, work so many of the different muscles because you're barefoot or you're in your socks. Check it out. Phil says, I'm a 30-year-old runner. What about the carbon fiber craze in running shoes? You know, Phil, it's interesting. Carbon fiber, which is a flexible material, which gives some spring off, also gives some slowing down that has been added to running shoes with, for the most part, good success. We tell runners all the time it is a change in the mechanics of the shoe itself. One of my concerns all along as they were developing this technology was whether it would overcorrect or cause problems. And it did. We would see, gee, you know, my knees are killing me with these new shoes. I don't know what it is. Everybody looking to get lighter and to be faster in so many ways. So here's my advice, Phil. We've also seen good success. If you're somebody who has had good success with your particular shoes, you want to give a try to some of the newer models,
that involved carbon fiber, I wouldn't be afraid of it. I wouldn't move into, if you've got a history of problems, then I would make sure you're paying attention to those problems. Maybe you're interested in the necessity of orthotics or physical therapy or those, et cetera. So if you haven't had problems, you want to try some of the carbon fiber shoes, see how the performance works, and give it a try. Just don't be too aggressive in the beginning. Again, happy Doctor's Day, everybody. It's the Sports Doctor. See you next week.